Rolling?
That's one of my favorites.
Rolling? Okay. And we're ready.
Good afternoon and welcome to this concluding session of this day of oral history for the collection of Charlie Wilson over in the Resource Center. For the record, my name is Archie McDonald. I'm a historian and worked here at SFA for quite a long time. We're recording this afternoon in the cinematography building on the Stephen F. Austin State University campus. In the room with us now are, in addition to technical staff, some other historians from the department, Dr. Scott Soseby, I see, Paul Sundahl, Perky Beisel is back there, and Mrs. Portia Gordon is also with us. And also for the record then, I'm going to ask each of you to identify yourselves and tell us, and I mean just very briefly at this point, what your role was in the life of Congressman Charlie Wilson. And we'll start with Peyton here since he's on my right. Okay.
Peyton Walters, I started out as a swamper and ended up as a swamper, but was district director for 12 years and chief of staff for six.
Excuse me, before we go on, one more thing. Please designate if you worked in the district or you worked in Washington or both, as Peyton just did.
L.G. Moore, former region director for the Operating Engineers Union, AFL CIO, who got to know Charlie back in the early 60s and went into the whole his whole career from my involvement with labor.
With labor. Yeah.
I mean, Foley, and I worked for Charlie for 6 years. 4 years in state senate and 2 years in Congress, and it was district assistant in Conroe.
Okay, good.
Ray Henson, I'm merely a voter and a backdoor neighbor to Charlie after he retired, but I was voting for him forever, and he helped me and I helped him.
Wish you could again.
Charlie Schnabel, I was secretary of the state senate when Charlie was a state senator for 6 years. And then his chief of staff in Washington for 6 years.
Okay, Dora.
Dora Thomas, friend of Charlie since about 1972. Personal friend. Later worked as his campaign manager in the 92 and 94 campaign.
Okay. I'm Bill Marshall. I was a district assistant in Lufkin, or district director as they call me. I worked first 5 years Charlie was in office. I was a state and district.
Okay.
Peggy Phillips Love. I worked for Charlie for 8 years in his Washington, D.C. office. I did casework and health legislation. I tell folks I was taking care of his constituents when he was taking care of the freedom fighters.
Okay.
Lori Donahoe. I worked in the district office for 4 years taking care of the home folks.
Good. I'm going to talk about that later.
Norma Butler, and I worked for Charlie in the Lufkin office for 14 years.
Okay, now I'm going to twist that question just a little bit with one word. Why, Peyton, why did you work with Charlie?
I consider Charlie the best legislator we had and a man of destiny, and I wanted to be part of that.
Okay. LG, different relationship, but same sort of question. What was?
Well, I think one thing that came very obvious to me is when Charlie was serving in the Senate, and Hannah, I think, was in the House.
John Hannah.
And you take the FLCIO would publish their voting record of all the senators, how to vote on labor issues and so forth. And I continue to watch the voting record, and Charlie and Hannah would have 85%, 90%, 95% voting record labor, but with very few, not that many union people in the district. And I went to him and I said, you're going to continue to vote with us, you're going to get beat. Because every opponent used that, you know, they had a pocket of labor. And so it became very obvious to me that Charlie was a different animal, that he knew what he wanted to do, he knew what he believed. And he was going to vote that way because he thought it was the right way. And he said to me one day, I said, how are you going to explain it? He said, go on and explain to the home folk that it's good for them too. I was captivated by Wilson in that if you read books of political books of great leaders and political leaders, Cairo books for Lyndon Johnson, and you read all of that, there was something different about Charlie Wilson. When you look at Charlie's wars and you see how he managed to wire all that together with a belly dancer on one hand and a congressman with a big ego from up in Ohio, and he took on a trip to get him to buy the deal. To me, that's a genius. I love Charlie Ford. I miss him every day.
I was like Doc Long, the congressman who had the key to the appropriations. Ian?
Charlie hired me out of SFA in 1969. I was supposed to just work one session, and I ended up staying with him for 6 years and enjoyed every minute of it.
Any particular anecdote connected with that that you want to share?
No, I don't think I better.
Why did you support him? He's
well,
a neighbor, I know, but
first,
beyond that.
The reason I supported him was when he first ran for the Senate, because I was living in Orange, Texas, being a native of Lefkins. I had lived in Orange for the 5 years previous to 1965 and didn't get to vote for him or know him. But when I moved back to Lefkins, he was running for the Senate, and he impressed me with his ability to not make himself the issue. If this is your position, you vote for this. You're not voting for me, vote for this. And he reminded me at the time a whole lot of Lyndon Johnson. They just both have the same political charisma. And I just fell into him and became a fan of his. Of course, I met him personally, and he did me several favors over the years. And of course, I always liked the humor side of Wilson. I told this morning that one of his early campaigns, his movie alluded to his swagger. And he was working nursing homes in East Texas and getting voters. And he swaggers into one, and there's an old gentleman sitting over there in a wheelchair, and Charlie runs over there and stuck his hand out and said, "Hi, I'm Charlie. Do you know who I am?" This guy said, "No, but if you'll go right back up there at that desk, I can tell you." And he takes things like that in stride and turn them into an asset.
I hope there's a place in a few years where I can go for that same service.
Right.
Charles?
Well, actually, I was elected as Secretary of the Senate, and so Charlie was one of the 31 votes that elected me. But then I kind of became the law enforcement collection between Charlie and the Austin Police Force.
Thank you.
And now we're going to break the ice. Go right ahead.
That, I had the county attorney's wife on my staff and the district attorney's wife on my staff, so I could communicate and help Charlie when he was in these
situations.
How he got to Washington is he bribed me. He called me, and then he made me, and then he bribed me with money to come to Washington. And
money worked.
I didn't think my wife would want to, but she turned out wanting to do that. And so I found myself in Washington.
And did a hell of a job.
Yeah.
And you did. And you shared a number of experiences with him, particularly when the Afghanistan Mujahideen connection came along, and we've all read about that in George Crowell's book, and we know that you had a good close relationship with him, and someday we'll let you tell us a little bit more about the police department. Dolores?
Well, I had known Charlie a long time as a friend, but Peyton started using some of my volunteers to work on the mobile office. And that's how I kind of got involved with him with the campaign.
The RSVP volunteers.
RSVP, and retired senior volunteers. And later I had to retire and move to Colorado. And Charlie called and needed me. And that's, I mean, if you've ever known him, if he called you and said he needed you, you would be there.
So you were very much involved in the campaigns against Donna Peterson.
Absolutely.
Those were the two of her three campaigns.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most fun I've ever had and the hardest I've ever worked.
Did you find the little cassette. Were you the one that found the cassette?
Yes, my God, I didn't know it was ever
going
to be. I do. Oh, it's like everywhere. We all have things we don't talk about.
Well, I don't know. Today we have to talk about them a little bit. Did that just come anonymously in the mail, or did you find it, you know, under the desk or what?
Someone told me if I walked a certain place, I might see something that would interest me.
Okay. Well, I won't probe that any further, but just for the record, I'll say I'm referring to an incident in congressional campaign in which a cassette with some incriminating kinds of information on it regarding Charlie's opponent was contained and then shared with the media and may have had some...
But I tell you what, it wasn't shared by Charlie.
No, I know.
No, he would not do it. I was ready to.
Well, let's talk a little bit more just for a second about that campaign. That was an opponent that really worried him.
92.
That was an opponent that really worried him. He
was scared to death of her. For one thing, she was dynamite good looking, and she could debate the pants off of him. And he knew that. But still.
And tried to match the military.
Was she the one he appointed to the Naval Academy? Is that the one?
Mm-hmm. She went to West Point.
West Point.
Okay. Did he appoint her to West Point?
I don't know that.
I don't know one way or the other, but I don't think so. But anyway, she tried to match his military strength, if you can call that, in politics, with her own. She was a helicopter pilot, right, there in the West Point. Bill?
I got involved with Charles Simpson, who was a professor at SFA, and I talked with Charles. I said, we need to go campaign for somebody. I just graduated from Stephen F. Austin. I was working in Lufkin. And he said, well, I got the candidate we're going to talk to. And he said, we'll talk about it. So we went and I was introduced to Charlie. Ian was around at that point. And I liked Charlie's vision. And I liked his, as I later learned or would put it, he was a very pragmatic ideologist. He was very pragmatic. He understood there's only so much you can do with your resources. And from that, you can, you develop your visions of how you're going to go, but you always got to look at, how much of this resource can I use on that to obtain it. And another thing that I looked at with Charlie was when we did discuss a lot of things before I went to work for him, and in that 72 campaign, his plan, and Ian, you can back me up on this, his plan was to run against John Tower for the Senate in 1978.
Absolutely.
And all of us were lining that up, and I'm just hanging my star with his star. I was hanging myself with him because I saw that vision. And Reagan referred to him as, very charismatic LBJ, and Charlie was. And Charlie would confess to his sins with, okay, I did it.
Yeah.
And then all of us have agreed, Charlie's mantra, which I totally agree with, take care of the home folk. And he never took himself seriously. He took the issues seriously.
So now we're coming to some of the people who did some of that. And you said that's what you did. And I hope you will both agree with me. I never considered that cynical. I mean, I think that was dead dog serious. And he's not unaware that it's also pretty good politics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's where your practical side will, I think, come back in. Because, as I heard him say one time, you got to get elected before you can vote.
Before you take
care of it. You got to get there and be able to do something. Okay, Peggy, you want to take us up there?
Sure. I got involved with Charlie before working for Charlie. I worked with Congressman Wayne Hayes, who's from Ohio. And Congressman Hayes was allegedly accused of having a woman on his payroll, Elizabeth Gray, to be his mistress.
And I
can attest to the fact that she could type, and that wasn't true, but Wayne was head of the House Administration Committee. He was a very powerful member of Congress, and if, you got on his wrong side, he would, make sure things happened that weren't very pleasant for you. And so when he left Congress, I really had a hard time finding a job. I mean, people wouldn't hire me because I worked for him. I wasn't even from his district, and of course, anywhere I went, I had to give a typing test or, you know, take shorthand, and it was very, very frustrating. And Charlie was the only one that offered me a decent job. And he offered me a job on December 16th, and on December 31st, I was being taken off the payroll. So I went to work for Charlie. And, you know, once I started working for him, he was, I really liked the way he operated. He liked to work hard, he liked to play hard. And Charlie was always an honest guy. He always knew where he stood. And in doing, you know, the health legislation, he wasn't really interested in that. So I had a lot of, let's say, freedom to kind of deal with the issues. And of course, I mean, I would come up with positions for him and run it by him. And I would develop these positions based on what the constituents were saying. And then when it came time to vote on an issue, you know, you do a one-pager for Charlie and run it by him and make sure, you know, we were in agreement. And, you know, I don't remember a time when we ever disagreed on an issue. But I enjoy the fact that he empowered the staff. And you knew what the rules were. You knew what you had to get done. You knew you had to get your job done. But he didn't really care how you went about doing it, as long as it got done. And I'm a real people person. I really enjoy helping the constituents. And I've got a scrapbook at home with, you know, copies of articles and letters and stuff from some of the constituents that I couldn't bring with me. But I just really enjoy it.
If you could sometimes let Paul just take a, what do you call that, Paul?
Scan.
Yeah.
Scan. Yeah, I was going to try to copy some of that when I get home.
Yeah, that would be very much appreciated. Were you there during Charles Simpson's period?
Yes, in fact, Charles Simpson interviewed me for the job.
And Larry Murphy?
Yes.
Who was, for the record, retired military officer, Navy, is that right?
Navy.
Yes.
Navy captain.
And who did an awful lot of constituent work, and I mean, for constituents with the Washington agencies and so forth.
Yes, in fact, when I worked with Charlie, I was going to undergraduate school at night. I can do things backwards. I went to undergraduate school and law school at night. And Larry used to help me with some of my calculus and stuff. That would just kind of, I mean, on lunch hour, mm-hmm. Get together, because he was really good in all that stuff. And he's like, Peggy, I don't understand why you don't understand it. But Larry was.
So you were in the Longworth building?
I started off in Longworth, and then we went to the Rayburn building.
Okay, the Longworth office was dark. I mean, the paneling and the wood and so forth was dark. And I think you can substantiate here for us, those offices aren't nearly as large as they are presented in the movies.
No, they are not.
They're smaller and crowded, and to some degree, people are sitting on top of each other in some of the work areas.
And that's
something that I think a lot of people. My prejudice is they all think all college professors are millionaires because of the houses they live in, you know, in the movies. So I just want to get that on the record. Laurie, what the question, if you've forgotten it, is why did you work?
I went to work to replace a caseworker in the district office. Prior to working for Charlie, I worked for Texas Department of Human Services as a caseworker. And I came to work with Charlie's office in referrals and information and resource for people who needed help. So when there was an opening, Charlie's office contacted me, and I went to work out in the office. And it was a great opportunity because you could reach more people, and you did, like Peggy said, have a lot more freedom in how you did your job. And he did expect us to work hard. He did expect us to answer every phone call and every walk-in. But the way you got that done, just do it. Think outside the box and make it work.
You know, LG said a moment ago that Charlie was reminiscent of LBJ. And when he was the AA for Bob Cleaver, that was his work.
Exactly.
And he let some people go because they were letting that slide. I guess that's, if you want to stay in around, that's a good rule to follow. Norma, you were mostly in the district, right? So
right.
What got you connected with Charlie, and why did you work for him?
I didn't know a whole lot about Charlie because I'm not from East Texas. But I was working for Detcog along with Dolores Wheeler, and Charlie had a position available. Minority rep he wanted to fill. And she made the recommendation.
The smartest thing I ever did.
It was pretty scary because I think he was going into a campaign at that time, and there was a sentence, job security during then.
Yeah.
So I, was kind of afraid to take the position, but after accepting and working with Charlie and for Charlie, best experience of my life.
That reminds me of Peyton. Helped me here. The black man who worked in the
Inez
office.
Inez.
Yeah. How long do you remember Inez? Because he was so special.
Oh, absolutely.
He was the key.
Yeah, he sure was.
Well, let's talk a little more about him. What's the rest of the name? I've forgotten.
Inez Kim.
K-I-M-S.
He was a practicing Christian.
About to get me to quit drinking.
He didn't have to tell you he was Christian. He showed you.
He just showed you.
He's one of the greatest guys ever. And I told him earlier in the interview this morning, Inez probably helped move me to any bias I had, racial bias I had, which we all have them or had them. And he removed that from me. I was a pallbearer at his funeral.
Yeah.
I know I met him, but I didn't have a lot of interaction with him, but I've often heard Charlie speak of him with such great fondness, and also Simpson, too, with such great fondness. Let's just establish a little bit more about Charles Simpson. Simpson was a political science instructor here at Stephen F. Austin, came to us about 1966 or 68, something like that. And was very active in practical politics, let's put it that way. And in Charlie's first campaign for the Congress, it was Simpson's wife who actually worked for Charlie in the campaign itself. But Charlie is also still teaching, and he's working very actively too. And then when Charlie was elected, then he asked Simpson to go to BAA with him. In Washington. Okay.
In 1972, I was ran Ralph Yarbrough's campaign through some of these East Texas counties. And I think it was 72, that convention meeting, I think. Anyway, we had the opened up the headquarters here in Nacogdoches. And it was the first integrated campaign headquarters that we'd ever had. It was in the old hotel where the Godtail is now, in the lobby. And Simpson and his wife came down and would volunteer from the campus.
Her name, by the way, is Louise, just for the record.
Right. So they would come down and volunteer and help me at the headquarters. And that was the first time I ever met Buddy Temple. He and Wilson and Wilson's wife, Jerry, came over, and that was the first time I ever met Buddy, and that was my first time. And then I worked with Simpson, but I watched Simpson, and he helped us.
Again, for the record, he's someone we ultimately need to interview, not only because of his long association with Charlie. I think he was the longest tenured of the three AAs.
He and LG equally, yeah. LG and Buddy together.
I guess you're right about that.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, he also had the same job with Senator Lloyd Benson, and then went into a lobbying career sort of after that. Well, since we've talked about these two non-present employees, does anybody else outstanding come to your mind you'd like to bring, in district or in Washington?
I got to tell you a real funny story, and Charles Neighbor could tell them all day long. Mine would be. Very simple compared to his. Maybe I ought to write a book. But I'm president of the Deer Park School Board. And I was elected, and I was a school board member. And the busing issue was a big, big issue. And I live, you know, Deer Park was a rich school district, and not its people, but the Houston Ship Town run right through the middle of it, and a great tax base. So Eckhart, Bob Eckhart, was our
congressman.
So my job that day was to pick Eckhart up, and Charlie just got elected to Congress. So anyway, we're riding over to the school, and Eckhart had his little bow tie on, and all picked up in his hat. And, you know, I guess Eckhart was really the only person I ever met that I considered a true blue blood intellectual, you know. But I said, making conversation, how's my friend Wilson doing? Oh, he said, he's just doing great. He said, LD, there's 435 of us up there. And Wilson is the only guy that can strut across the floor as if he was the United States Senator.
Well, my relationship with Eckhart was to fix the flats on his bicycle.
That's a relationship. I picked him as my congressman because I had John Dowdy up here.
Oh, dear.
I just picked another one. He was the one I liked.
Charlie said John Dowdy had the best campaign song he had ever
heard. Oh, I did. For Dowdy.
He could sing it from start to finish and did it almost every time of the night.
Yeah. One time I helped write a campaign song in opposed to that.
I think it'd be good if you could conduct interviews like this in the Washington, D.C. area. Because there's a lot of, you know, the angels that live up there. Elaine, who was the press secretary, she's got, you know, got stories. And Candy Shy and Carol Simons used to be a secretary. And I go on and on and on.
And Amy.
And Amy. And Amy's actually in Georgia right now, but you know, she might be able to fly up. And D.C. is a lot easier to get to this year. And I know Agnes Bundy Scanlon is, I mean, no offense, I love her down here. And Agnes Bundy Scanlon is in Massachusetts, but I know sometimes she comes to D.C. for meetings.
Well, Paul is commissioned to raise the money for he and Scott and Perky and I to go up there and do exactly that.
I've talked to Paul.
And to take about a week to do it. So.
You got Charlie here who's in Austin, and you got Barnes' group, Ben Barnes, up there. Don't you agree, Charlie, that this would be such a great thing to go to Austin? And I told someone this morning, if you guys got to raise money and the school don't have it, I would be happy to help you guys do that.
We probably have to, because I guarantee you when the session's over, we're not going to have it.
You're not going to have it. That's exactly right. But I think if you could get Barnes, you could, couldn't you, Charlie?
Yeah.
Head that thing out. You could get them.
Well, we'd be glad to arrange that. Not a lot of time, but we've got something out here this year, and we ought to really seriously talk about that. Bill, you had something?
Charlie had a press secretary by the name of Al Reinert. I don't know if y'all remember. You remember Al?
Yeah, he wrote for Texas Monthly.
He wrote for Texas Monthly.
Yeah.
He was a colorful press secretary, let me tell you. And when Al left, y'all know what franking privileges are? Al franked all of his household goods back to the district. They came to the Lufkin office because all of a sudden I'm getting all these boxes.
Bob's going to Conroe too.
He sent him to Conroe, he came by in his car and he'd already left, Charlie. I got all these boxes here. I'm calling Simpson up saying, what all this stuff for Reinert? I don't know what it is. But Al had taken all the Charlie Wilson stamp and stamped all his posters, franked it back to the district. And he came back in his car and picked it all up. And I said, what is all this, Al? He said, it's my clothes and my pots and pans. Have you ever been caught on that? I'm just going to...
And our radio... Leavenworth sounds like a place.
And the district office was in a radio station in Conroe.
Oh, Conroe.
And they saw that stuff coming in.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yeah. Tom Bacon was... I think he's on KPRC radio, isn't he?
Yeah.
Tom Bacon was a press secretary.
Yeah.
And I'm sure has a few stories, but Reinert was a character.
I don't think I ever met him.
Yeah.
I may be better off
to work for Charlie.
He may not be around there, but.
He wasn't that long ago.
Paul Burke took one in Austin.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
He had a lot of
We're getting a lot of good names for the record, and we've got your number in your face here now, so we may
be
asking you for contact data and that sort of thing, and maybe even just how to spell some of these names, because I haven't been too careful with that. Occasionally I've remembered to do it, and Paul's saying, yes, please, because it's crucial that we get that sort of the record as straight as we can. Let me move on a little bit. We explored a little bit already this concept of taking care of the home folks. And I want to ask you this, because I've already sort of told you what I think about it. Just what did that mean to you? I mean, why do you think that was so important to him? And then what did it mean to you while you were doing it? Maybe we'll start over with you. Did I cut to... No, well, you got the envelope. Okay, go ahead.
Certainly have a deep inner feeling for people. And when they needed help, he wanted to help. When Charlie came down from D.C., and I know everybody in this room that's picked him up at the airport and brought him to the district has witnessed this, he'd be kind of down, maybe tired or whatever. But when he got among the people, you could just see the energy rising. Adrenaline, and he'd get to going, and you found it hard to stop him sometimes when you needed to go home and rest a little. But he never turned anybody away that wanted to tell him about their problems, and he really had a feeling for the people.
I think you know, and I've spent a lot of time over the years, and you know, someone told me a long time ago, I think it was Oscar Wilde, never fall in love with a politician, because if you do that, eventually it'll break your heart. And I fell in love with Charlie, and he never did break my heart. Because there was something in Charlie that he brought from Trinity, Texas to Annapolis, wherever he had been, back here. Back in Trinity, he understood that guy cutting logs, cutting pulpwood. He had seen it. He paid attention to it. And he felt that if I'm going to go ask them to let me do something very few people ever get to do, and that's Bill Congress, then I have an obligation to those people to make government the best I can work for them and make it as easy as possible. And when all of a sudden I've seen these portable offices showing up in Cushing, Texas, or here or there, and the guy could go down and upset about his Social Security, whatever his problem might be. That was about as good as I've ever seen bringing the governor to right to their front door. I think Charlie actually truly believed that the government is us, and it's about being sure we help each other. And the form of government we use is this, and I'm a little bitty part of that. I'm going to bust my butt. Somebody said Charlie played hard. Oh, man, did he. Yeah, he caused me a lot of headache before. Now, not because I'm worried about him, but because I tried to drink scotch with him. But I'm going to end by telling you this real funny story about Charlie. I'm in Washington, D.C. working. And I called him up, and I asked him, did you want to go and have dinner at the Democratic Club? He said, come over to the office and tell me what time. And I go over, and he just went through that hailstorm about his relationship with the Playboy girl,
Liz
Wickersham. Liz.
Wickersham, yeah. Charlie Thomas.
So we had it, and I don't know whether there's anybody left in the office, but we had our scotch and we were having a few drinks. And I brought it up. And I said, did you ever see her? Because I was just enamored with her. He saw her, talked to her every day. Boy, he can make you laugh. He can make laugh at himself. I said, I'll book you. He said, oh, yeah. You want to visit with her? He opens up that little door there in that closet, and he had a cutout of it.
Well, what did you say, LJ?
I said, hello.
Hello there.
Oh, yeah. That's Charlie. Charlie was Charlie.
Well, now you've introduced another subject. Let's talk about it a little bit.
Okay.
And now that it's out on the floor. Now, I didn't meet her, but I did meet Elise Elchenko.
Mm-hmm.
And I know most of you probably met some of the paramours through the years. What are some of the interesting things you can possibly tell on tape that you'd share with us?
I got a story about Annalise. After the 84 elections, we went to Scrappin' Valley. Charlie took all the people who helped in the campaign to Scrappin' Valley. And Charlie had a lot of automatic weapons, one of which was a Uzi. And yeah, I mean, we were shooting Galils and all kinds of weapons, Uzis, captured AK-47s, fully automatic. Yeah. These were single shot.
Yeah. I brought them back.
And anyway, Charlie's trying to get Annalise to shoot this Uzi, and she says, "I don't want to shoot it, Charlie." He says, "I'll shoot it," and she says, "I don't want to shoot it. Yeah, shoot it. No, no, no." And so I know she's very, you know, not wanting to shoot it. So I flipped it off fully automatic to semi. You know, you got to get a selector switch. So I slipped it down and going, okay, she'll just pull a trigger, one bullet will go off. Charlie saw me do it in the flip of an eye. He flipped it back to fully automatic. She pulled the trigger. Now, this thing will shoot 30 rounds before the first empty shell hits the ground. You're through the 30 bullets. And she went like this. And there were people over here. I mean, it was just clearing the tree over to our right. I mean, limbs were coming down. Leaves were coming down. Charlie looked at me. I looked at Charlie. He just handed me the Uzi, and nothing else was said. But that was my story.
That's good enough.
While we're on the subject of the AK-47 and the AR-15, Chuck, you said you brought them back. I called Charlie's office one day, and when he was in the federal building, I asked him if he would go to my son's 8th grade history class and make a speech. He said, "Sure, come on, pick me up." I get up there, and Charlie comes swaggering out of down the hallway, and he's got an AK-47 and an AR-15 in his hand. And I thought, "We're going to school, Charlie." He said, "We're going to stop by Holsenbach, the gun, right wing gun dealer down the street from him." He said, "We're going to take these by there and drop them off to him. He wants to look at them." Hands me the, I can't remember which one it was. And First Street is the main street in town. And I said, "Charlie, it's against the law to even have one of these in your possession." "Oh, don't worry about it. We'll get it." We went on down to Holsenbach, and of course I got out and got mine. I did like this. Took it in there and left it, and he told me later that he gave those to A&M. He never could get a clearing. And that Uzi,
yeah,
it's in the bottom of Lake Raymer.
It is.
He tried to get it okay to own it from the ATF, and he never could get it done. He even offered to lug it up.
They took away his.
No, he threw it in the lake.
No, his cane pistol. Remember, his cane pistol, the .32 caliber cane pistol, looked like a walking cane.
I don't
That one they did take away from him.
I still got one.
You still
got one, Charlie.
They got Charlie's away.
After his death, did somebody come and get the rocket launcher?
I don't know what happened to the Stinger. I think he donated it.
Yeah,
I think it went to A&M.
The night that he had won the election, if I remember instant correct me, probably, we were all assembled at the Lufkin at the courthouse. That's when the returns were coming in and they were posting them.
Was this 84 or?
The first time when he won.
72.
And we had had, the Machinist Union had furnished the firepower around his house.
We got that.
I mean, we had gotten this rumor, and I don't know what it's fact or fiction, but anyway, we took it seriously, that we had a lot of the Wallace people were involved in that committee, and they were going to be in, and his wife, Jerry, they were going to break her hand, shake hands with her, break her hand, or do her damn. But, so we didn't know whether that was fact or fiction, and still don't know, but anyway, we brought some guys up from Houston, and they was out camped out in the woods out there, and everybody had guns, and you know, we were loaded back. So the night of the return, it was a beautiful night. Arthur Temple Sr. was standing over here. I think Ray Hinton was over here. We're all here. John Hanna was here, and the returns were coming in, and we're winning. And all these guys who had been protecting Charlie was there, and you know they didn't leave their guns in the woods, so they had to have the gun. And a big old owl lived in the tree. This is a true story. I did not make this story up. And Hannah looked up and said, "If that owl hoots, half these people in there are going to get killed."
He's probably right. Doris, you had your hand up a minute ago. I hope you remember it.
Annalise, they had a roast for Charlie at Lufkin. Some of you probably remember that. And the belly dancers were there. And I never will forget, she walked across there and slapped that sword out of her hand, out of the belly dancers. Mm-hmm. And I thought they were going to go at it like that.
Well, that was
somehow Charlie got them separated. But I mean, that was a little bit unusual to wind up on.
Well, now, to set the scene, this is in the Civic Center in Lufkin.
Lufkin.
And the belly dancer, who was a friend. He's in a chair all by himself out in the middle of the floor. And so the performance is for him, and all the rest of us are just kind of standing around wishing we were in the chair.
Right.
And so that was the scene. Well, the only thing I really remember about Annalise, other than that she was a fantastically gorgeous woman, she's the first woman that I ever saw wear these speckled stockings and things, you know.
With 7-inch heels.
Yeah. And I think she introduced that to East Texas, I'm not sure.
You know, we got to remember that Charlie, and was only pulling off, brought the mayor of New York City.
Oh, I remember.
Right.
I remember it so well. And you remember the context, LG? New York City is in dire financial straits.
Exactly.
And he brings Eddie Koch. They had been off virtually office mates in Longworth. And
what were the contract together?
Yes. He made Eddie an admiral in the Toledo Ben
Navy.
And he said, "I want to tell you, not one penny of federal money was spent building Toledo Ben." And after a pause, he said, "It was all borrowed from New York banks." So he made his point to the home folks again.
Yeah.
And we're still talking about home folks now. I didn't get totally derailed. And we got about over here. What did that really mean to you, Dolores?
Well, before I forget this thought,
okay.
Ann Richards that night was so hilarious, and she described him to a T when she said he was the only person she had ever known who strutted sitting in a chair.
Yeah. Well, you keep talking about John Hanna. She also said John Hanna was the handsomest man in Texas, too. I heard her say that four times. So I guess she meant it.
But taking care of the home folks made it very easy to be a campaign manager for Charlie, because he truly did that. And it was not hard to get out and campaign. The issues of what he did in D.C. or the flamboyant lifestyle he had just never came up. They were totally devoted to him.
And they remembered it at ballot time.
I had an issue one time. Our company I worked for quit putting the lump sum value of your 401k on it. And, of course, typical company way, they said the government won't let us do that anymore. Well, I didn't buy that, so I called. A month or two later, I called Peyton and asked him to look into it. And about an hour and a half, I got a call from an Italian guy, and that was the area director of the Labor Department. Yes, Labor Department, of Labor. And he said, "You asked it so and so and so and so." Said, "Now my answer is, no, they don't have to quit putting it on there, but that some of them chose to do so for a couple of years." I said, "Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate you calling me back." He said, "Well, before you go, I've got a question to ask you." I said, "Well, go right ahead." He said, "What do you know on your congressman?" I know a lot of things, but I'm not going to tell them to you. But Charlie and his staff, I don't know if I give them credit for it, got that done. It would have taken me 6 months to get an answer. Well, he said, I have 45 requests on my desk ahead of yours. And I was told to get yours taken care of.
Well, I imagine we all, I mean, I personally have some experiences like that, and I imagine everybody in here either did or they worked with people.
Yeah. You know, he did his own casework for a long time. When I went to work for him in 1969, he was doing his own casework. And then he decided I'd do it for a while. But I had no idea who to call. He said, well, call Charlie Snable or call, you know, whoever. And he had a list of people. He knew how to get things done because he knew who to talk to.
That's important, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's important, knowing who to talk to.
That's right.
Yeah. The phrase is, it ain't what you know, it's who you know.
No, it's not who you know or what you know, it's what you know and who.
Okay, that opens up something then. Let's just chase that rabbit just a little bit. Part of Charlie's success, let's say, in the latter, well, in the 80s years, was his connection with Tip O'Neill. Now, Charlie, you were there for some of that, I know. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, Charlie knew which buttons to push, and Tip O'Neill was certainly a button. And it's interesting to know how Charlie got appointed to the Kennedy Center. Charlie had been on the ethics committee when he had an ethics problem, and he told Tip, I'll get off the ethics committee if you appoint me to the Kennedy Center. Isn't that the way it happened?
Now, you going to tell us why you wanted that appointment?
Prestige.
Now, do you remember who was the main congressman who did not attend the State of the Union address in 1980, whatever it was, Peyton, when Ronald Reagan was giving the address?
Charlie Wilson.
Where did he go?
He went to the club.
Where did he go?
The Lion Club. Wasn't that the name of it, Peyton?
I'm sorry.
He went to New York to a Broadway show and then to the club.
Yes, that's where the Horace in Texas.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So he had an interest in theater then. That's what we're saying. Okay.
Tip O'Neill came to Lufkin.
Yeah. Did he really? Yeah. I don't remember that. Yeah, it was a Monday coming. And I remember
was Lufkin, too.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
You don't remember that?
But actually, he missed another state of the
Maybe it wasn't Woodland.
He was there.
He was there that night.
Yeah, that's right.
And he promised Charlie he wouldn't put anything on TV. Well, of course he did.
Yes.
Where was your congressman when the State of the Union was going on? Oh, Wilson wanted to kill him.
Well, and did Charlie have, he had a friendship with the man who wrote that play.
Larry King.
Oh, yeah.
Larry King.
Yeah.
They were drunk and disorderly 100 times. Every cop in D.C. they both of them.
They're in Austin, too, right, Charlie?
Orange, Texas, too. I was with him there one time.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, King was there as well.
Oh, yeah.
And then Larry King went to drunk school.
And
quit drinking, and he would come talk to Charlie about going to an AA meeting with him, the Tuesday morning AA meeting at the Capitol. Mm-hmm. And Charlie wouldn't go. And one time Larry King said, don't expect me to carry the casket of a no good drunk son of a bitch that wouldn't quit drinking. And the only way he could get rid of Larry was to say, all right, I'll come to the day meeting. And Larry King said, okay, I'm going to call you now in the morning to make sure you go. And Charlie would go home and take the phone off the hook.
There were a couple of writers in Austin, Bud Schrake and Gary Cartwright.
Gary Cartwright
would go down to Mexico, down below Acapulco, up above Acapulco, whatever, I forget where to what the money holds. And Cartwright liked to have grass, or, you know, and so
like what?
So we've been down to Mexico a week, and we're going to clear the airport in San Antonio. And I could tell Cartwright's kind of laying back a little bit. He's letting everybody clear customs. And we clear customs, and he said, "Wilson, hang on a second, I need to get something out of your bag." And he reaches in, and he gets a bag, gets a brick out of the Can you imagine him trying to explain that wasn't his?
No. That would have been a difficult task. Gary Cartwright, for the record, is a writer of Texan that works for the Texas Monthly Magazine. Semi-retired now, but he's still active.
I told this story this morning in the interview, but I think for the people that may not know it, some of it didn't. I was working for Charlie, and I go home for the weekend. And I get a call, and he said, "You got to turn around and come back up here. We got a real situation." Turn around, drove back up here. And I think Ian was there, and I don't know where the Ray was. But Birdwell had threw this thing in everybody's yard that was Charlie's mugshot. And I don't think he was drunk. He probably just overslept some, but the hair was all down his face. And the word had come to Wilson that there was another one coming out that was really going to shake the foundation. So he tells me, our good friend that just passed away here in Nacogdoches, Duke Bradson, had been practicing law in Lufkin, and he had represented the wife of Birdwell in a divorce proceeding. For whatever reason, she was spring cleaning and found a box full of love letters from Birdwell's girlfriend. If I remember, one was pregnant, and it's just like reading a porno novel. So Duke had made that available to us. Wilson didn't know exactly what we're going to do with this. Well, you know, before cell phones, all the landlines, so nobody knew where he was calling from. So I just walk over to the phone, and I get Birdwell on the phone. I didn't lie to him. I told him what my name was, what my job was. And I told him that I thought he was going to give Charlie a real run for the money. And I was going to hedge my bets. And I want to meet him in Conroe and give him some money. Well, that's all it took. And so we set up a meeting, and I had this guy work for me that some of these guys know. And he's now gone, and you could take him to the best fashion designer in the world and put the best clothes on. He still looked like a mafia guy. Swarthy, black, greasy head. It was a pilot. And Birdwell was also a pilot. So I said, "Come on, Jackie, you're going with me." That was a pretty tough time. So anyway, we go to Conroe, and in the meantime, Birdwell has got him a new wife. And she had a little girl, and they were sitting over on the far side of the coffee shop. Wasn't there anybody in there. So he knew who to look for, and we shook hands and this, and he comes over and sits down with us. So he and Jackie fly an airplane. So in a little bit, I said, "Mr. Birdwell, I lied to you to get you to come to the meeting. I am who I told you I was. But I'm not going to give you any money. But you've been doing these bad things to our friend Charlie." He said, "You ain't seen nothing yet." I said, "But before you do that, can I show you something? That if you continue to do it, we're going to be forced to." And I picked two or three of the juiciest letters. I said, "I think you ought to read these first." And he kept looking over his wife. He said, "Can we step outside?" I said, "Yeah, we go outside." He said, "What do you want me to do?" I said, "Start talking about education, social security, the things that matter." I think, Charlie, that there was a special session was going on, and Charlie was back in Austin. So he agreed that we had a deal. So I got to the payphone, and I got Charlie off the floor. He said, "Are you sure?" I said, "If you'd have seen the look in his eyes, it's for sure."
Well, we all agree that there were lots of Charlies. Lots of
great fun, Charlie.
Lots of different facets to that interesting personality. But before Paul starts swinging his finger in the air, I want to tell him it's about time. I want to ask one more question. We'll go around. We'll start with Norma back there this time, give the back row a little bit of a chance. And with this statement that I wrote down here, Charlie's congressional career extends from the early 70s through the mid-90s. Discuss your single most memorable experience while you were working for him. Now, he may be involved in it or not. Either way works, but the most memorable experience.
Well, one of the most memorable experience was pulling together about 500 African Americans to have dinner with Charlie one night at the Civic Center. He thought that we'd only get about 200. I said, "Well, Charlie, we'll prepare for 500. 200 would be fine later that way." And sure enough, right at 500, showed up, and he was delighted. It was a good night.
And comfortable.
Yes.
Yeah, and comfortable. That's good. Lori?
Gosh, there's a lot of great. What was the question?
Well, I'll broaden it. It doesn't have to be the one, but interesting experiences working with or for Charlie.
Taking care of the home folks was interesting every day because you never knew what anyone would say on the phone or in person. You never knew what problem or trouble they were going to bring. People do not walk into a district office typically because they're happy. So it was interesting to hear all of the different stories and get to know the people of Deep East Texas. On a personal note, one of my fondest memories is when he learned that my husband served on the Constellation during the Vietnam War. Charlie's last carrier tour was on the Constellation. And when he learned that, he said, "Now, Lori, don't say anything. If I could get Glenn on that tour." And I said, "Oh, he'd love it. Don't say anything." And sure enough, he got Glenn on the carrier tour. And he told Glenn, "I don't know if I can get Lori on. Bring her on out to San Diego. You know, worst case, she stays on the beach for a couple of days." But he took Glenn and I. We flew out, landed on a carrier, spent a couple of days. And at the time, my husband had a ponytail, which was not popular with his employer, the U.S. Forest Service, but it was real popular with Charlie. Because he liked people that were different and renegades. So every on the ship, he would introduce my husband. "This is Glenn Donahoe, and he works with the U.S. Forest Service. He's the only one with a ponytail, and he served on the Constellation." So that was a lot.
That was the bona fide.
Yes.
I think my best accomplishment, you know, working for Charlie's first, you know, helping the home folks, there's a senior center, and I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's here in Acadia. I've got an article that was in the local paper here that I can provide with all the exact details, but the director's name was Cheryl. I don't remember her last name, but she wrote Charlie a letter, and the IRS had passed some legislation, and she was supposed to be deducting Social Security taxes on her employees, and her accountant didn't know about the law, and you know, she got this letter from the IRS that she owed like $18,000 in back taxes. And she, you know, she said if she had to pay, she was going to have to close the door on the center. Well, I wrote a letter to the IRS, and you know, normally we just put a cover letter from Charlie asking to look into it. And I got this letter back from the IRS. It was like 3 pages, and I couldn't understand. And I'm thinking, if I can't understand, I know she's not going to be able to understand. And it seemed like it was conflicting, you know, page one and page three. So I called the IRS, the staff that wrote the letter, and, you know, I wasn't getting straight answers. I felt like she was trying to give me the runaround. And, you know, I'm not the brightest person in the world, but, you know, I just didn't like the answers I was getting. And I can be a pain at times, even though I try to be nice. But I kept pushing and pushing. I ended up talking to the director of the IRS in Dallas, and I guess he got tired of my pushing, and because I just wasn't satisfied with his answers, and he finally agreed that the letter was a little contradictory, and he ended up reversing his decision, and the center did not have to pay these back taxes. They were going to have to start paying, you know, forward, which was fair, and the director at the center wanted me to come down to Nacogdoches, and he interviewed with a local paper. And she was just so happy at what, you know, Charlie's office had done for her. And I said, well, that is very nice, but I work for your congressman, and your congressman is the one that actually made this happen. So Charlie came down, and they did this article, and it was in a local paper. And again, I can provide that for you if you like. Because I got to thinking, once you fight the IRS and win, you know.
I'm going to give you a medal. I've never known anybody to do that before.
Yeah. And then on a personal note, when I worked for Charlie, the Navy liaison office, they took staffers on tours. And I went down with the Navy liaison office down in North Virginia. They gave us some briefings and showed us how the Navy operated. And they took us on a submarine, and they took us on an aircraft carrier. And when we were on the carrier, they showed us this film. We were at the little IMAX meeting. They showed us the film of these planes catapulting off the carrier. And I mean, your heart is just pounding. And I know, you know, you had the experience. And when we get out of the theater, I went up to this commander that was, you know, kind of our escort. And I said, do you take staffers on rides on those fighter planes? And you could see the look on his face, like, oh my God. Because he knew I worked for Charlie, and Charlie was on appropriations, and Charlie was, you know, a Naval Academy graduate. And he said, Peggy, I can't make it happen, but I can tell you who you need to talk to. Anyway, so I was referred to the Navy liaison office, and then they told me I had to get a letter from Charlie, and I asked Charlie, but he said, sure, go ahead, I'll sign the letter. So I wrote the letter, and a couple weeks later, I got a call from the Navy liaison office in the Rayburn building, and they said my request had been denied. And, of course, I was disappointed, but I kind of expected, you know, it, I knew it was a long shot. So I went and I told Charlie, and he said, well, you know, nice try. That afternoon, I got a call from the Secretary of Defense's office at the Pentagon, and they're wanting to know when I wanted to fly down to France. And I'm like, excuse me? And they told me the Secretary had approved the request. And so I go running into Charlie's office, because I thought he made a call or something, and he said, no, he didn't. He said, if anybody could pull it off, you could. And so I got to fly in the back seat of a fighter plane, and at the time, I was talking to my staff. I had that opportunity to do that. And it was, I mean, it was just really, really a lot of fun.
That's good.
So I have Charlie to thank for that.
Well, Paul has given me the signal, and I'm sorry we didn't get all the way around to that, but I do want to conclude with one anecdote. And Peyton, you'll have to help me here. The lady in the swing on the porch in the TV spot. Remember the name?
Miss Chapman.
Miss Chapman. I think that it captured the essence of the home folks for me. This was a spot in a campaign, and I viewed it with Charlie when he was viewing it before approving it to go. And the state senator, Roy Blake, was with us there. And the lady is in the swing, and she's telling her story about nearly losing her house, except she called Charlie, and the voice broke just at that moment. And when Roy Blake saw that, he grabbed him by the arm. He says, who is she? Who is she? I want to use her. And Charlie said, honest to God, it happened just that way. That's a true story, you know. And I think that kind of captures the whole thing. Well, you're all troopers. You're all winners. You've been at this all day, and Paul's going to say a few concluding words here in a minute. But me, thank you personally. I gave you all one of my cards at the beginning. If I can ever do anything for you, and I mean anything, give me a call, and or a call or email or whatever method is available. I appreciate very much your coming and inaugurating this for us, because this is the beginning. Paul?
You stole my thunder. This is definitely just the beginning, and I want to thank everybody for coming out and participating. But I think at this point, two things I really want to stress is help us continue the ball rolling. So contacts and names. I have all your numbers, of course, and you know I do, so I'll be calling you some more and trying to carry it forward. And the other is just some logistics on helping you get back to your cars. So we don't really need to record that.